You're tuning into the Real Estate Diversification Podcast, hosted by trusted and experienced real estate attorneys who are also seasoned real estate investors themselves. Are you ready to explore unique real estate investing opportunities? Ready to learn about emerging trends and new ideas? Your hosts will help you understand the practical and legal complexities of a myriad of real estate investments so that you can maximize your potential and achieve financial freedom. Now, listen in and get ready to learn.
Get ready to learn.
Welcome back, Red Podcast Nation. This is Jonathan Gilmore. Today, we're going to be talking about self-storage facilities or mini storage facilities. I might just refer to them as self-storage or storage units. Owning a storage unit facility can be profitable and rewarding, and it can also be something that's treacherous, right? It requires careful planning and management. A storage facility is a type of real estate that provides customers with a place to store their belongings, such as furniture, household items, and vehicles. Self-storage units can be standalone building, can be a portion of an existing facility, and it typically comprises of multiple units of various sizes, which are leased to customers on a month-to-month basis. As the direct owner of a storage unit, you would be you would be responsible for acquiring and maintaining the property, managing day-to-day operations, and marketing the facility to attract and retain customers. Additionally, you would need to comply with all rules, regulations, zoning laws, building codes, things like that, which will ensure the safety of the property that's actually stored on your property. The success of this business will depend on several factors: location, competition, and demand for storage in the area. With the right strategy, a storage facility can be a profitable and stable investment, but it is important to do your due diligence on the front end, research the market, make sure you comply with all laws and regulations before buying this facility. So, what is unique about a self-storage facility? Well, quite frankly, it is almost alone in its asset class, right? It is a place, sure, you can store in your house. Sure, you can store if you have an apartment complex, but you don't have a lot of space. Some places that the space is at a premium. Self-storage facility is an asset class where it's kind of unheard of to have any real competition other than other self-storage facilities, okay? The COVID-19 pandemic really showed the need for people to store stuff they bought with the stimulus money, right? It seems to be that the trend was increasing and still, for same and different reasons, continues to trend upwards. Right? Self-storage facilities, for instance, here are the pros, right? Self-storage facilities are recession resistant. They're often considered recession resistant because they tend to perform well during economic downturns, okay? Somebody during a recession needs to downgrade, downsize their living space from, let's say, a 6,000 square foot home to a 2,500 square foot home, from a 2,500 square foot home to an 1,800 or 1,600 square foot apartment complex. They don't have a place to put their stuff. They don't want to get rid of their stuff. So they need to find a place to store it. Self-storage units are key. Another thing that's great about pros with regards to self-storage units is high demand. So self-storage facilities are continuing to grow. One of the reasons we're seeing it grow is because you have a large portion of the U.S. demographic, baby boomers, downsizing currently in their homes. They had 6,000 square foot homes to raise their kids. The kids have moved out, right? So they are downsizing to smaller homes, but they don't want to get rid of their stuff. Maybe they're saving it for they're saving it for their kids, right? To pass along. There's an inheritance component of this. Maybe they're just not ready to get rid of their stuff, but they are ready to downsize. So higher demand in certain areas is there, and that is a pro. Another pro is multiple revenue streams. Multiple revenue streams, oftentimes self-storage owners can own several properties, right? And through owning those several properties, they have different diversified income streams tied to not just rental income, but also late fees, administrative fees, and the like. Self-storage facilities also tend to have low operating costs, right? There's not amenities, you know, like there would be with a single family development. There's not things like that. There's not a swimming pool. There might be an office, but maybe that's about it. Some maintenance components to this. So they generally have low operating costs because they require minimal maintenance and staffing compared to other types of real estate investments. And like with a lot of investments, there's potential for capital appreciation. They can appreciate in value over time, especially in markets with high demand and limited supply. What are some of the cons, some of the negatives that are associated with investing in this type of asset class? Well, while self-storage facilities may have lower operating costs compared to other real estate investments, they require significant upfront capital investments for construction or property acquisition. So obviously, there's going to be a lot of money that goes in on a development of self-storage unit. But in some areas, the land basis might be high because the demand's so high. Speaking of the demand being high, in some areas, competition is high. The self-storage market is highly competitive, especially in urban areas where land prices are high. New entrants may struggle to find suitable properties or face challenges in securing financing when it comes to entering into these highly competitive markets. There are also certain zoning and safety issues that are related and tied to self-storage. It's not completely specific to self-storage facilities. However, it does impact self-storage facilities like it does other asset classes. More on that later in the legal considerations. There's also security and liability concerns, maybe more so, right, with personal property. People put it up, there's a lock and a door between, and sometimes a gate, between a potential, theft of this person's property. So self-storage facilities may be vulnerable to security breaches or liability claims if customers' possessions are damaged or stolen. So operators must take appropriate measures to mitigate these risks. So, and more on that topic, how can an operator of a self-storage facility mitigate liability claims? Well, there's a few things. They can implement effective safety measures. So this may include installing security cameras, using electronic access control systems, hiring security personnel. These are all additional costs to operating a self-storage facility. Additionally, insurance coverage. Adequate insurance coverage can protect an operator against liability claims and would cover what we just talked about, damage, theft, bodily injury claims, as well as provide coverage for legal fees and other related expenses. So another thing that can be used to mitigate certain losses for an investor in a self-storage facility is the rental agreements, a clear rental agreement between the owner, operator, and one of the lessee tenants will outline the responsibilities of both the operator and the customer, which can help reduce the risk of liability claims. So the rental agreement should include provisions, limitations of liabilities, outline the customer's obligations, and provide information on how to make a claim in the event that one is required. So regular maintenance, another way to mitigate these risks. It can help, degradation of property damages, accidents can be prevented by routine inspections of the facility, of the equipment, of the storage unit, as well as prompt repairs. Kind of like with a lot of asset classes, but if one person's watching this asset class, you can kind of get out in front of this stuff. So, and then proper staff training. That's how you can mitigate some of these risks. So, staff should be trained on proper storage procedures, emergency protocols, and how to interact with customers. So these are just a few ways to an operator of a self-storage facility can take several steps to mitigate liability claims, which can be a con in this asset class. So profitability. So profitability of a storage facility is determined by several factors, including occupancy rate, rental rates, and operating expenses. So all these items should be a part of any investor's pro forma and should be played. If you're a limited partner in one of these asset investments, you should pay close attention to the pro forma and make sure these are addressed. So the occupancy rate, right? That's the percentage of storage units that are rented out, physically occupied by possessions at any given time. So high occupancy rate obviously indicates the facility is in high demand and is generating a steady stream of income. Low occupancy rate, on the other hand, indicates the facility is not being marketed effectively, the rental rates are too high, or there's too much competition in the area. So occupancy rate should be monitored regularly and steps should be taken to approve it if necessary. Rental rates are the amount of money that customers pay to rent storage units. So these rates should be set out at a level that's competitive with other storage facilities in the area, but also high enough to generate a profit. Rental rates can be adjusted, based on demand and market conditions. Operating expenses is the third. Operating expenses include costs such as property taxes, insurance, maintenance, and utilities. So these expenses, just like everything else, should be carefully managed to ensure that they do not eat into facilities profits. Okay. As with most investments, a self-storage operator owner should consider the economies of scale when looking at these expenses. So Regarding profitability, location is of the facility is crucial in determining profitability. A facility located in a densely populated area with high demand for storage will be more profitable than one located in a remote area with little demand. And then also demographics are important. You know, I mentioned the baby boomers earlier. So if we have a lot of downsizing people, people downsizing their house in the in a certain area, well, that's going to lead to more demand for self-storage units. So marketing, advertising, you know, word of mouth is great, but a storage facility should be marketed, advertised, effectively attract and retain customers. So landlords need to market this like with any other business. So, and then finally, security systems. I briefly mentioned that before, properly installed, monitored security system and access controls should be put in place in order to maximize profitability. So when you're looking at acquiring a self-storage facility, there are several legal considerations to account for, right? So regulatory challenges, such as zoning restrictions and building codes, are one of those items. So some states may have more stringent regulations than others, which could impact profitability, like we just discussed. So in some areas, self-storage facilities may be subject to a minimum lot sizes or distance from residential areas. So it's important for self-storage operators and investors to be aware of these regulations before purchasing or developing a mini storage property. Failure to comply with zoning and land use regulations can result in fines, penalties, or worst case scenario, closure of the facility and tanking of the entire deal. So additionally, these types of units and facilities are subject to building and fire codes. And these are designed to ensure the safety of tenants and protect the surrounding community from fire hazards. These codes may specify requirements for building materials, ventilation, lighting, security systems, and more. Self-storage operators and investors must ensure that their facilities comply with these codes, and they may be required to obtain permits or inspections to demonstrate such compliance. I mentioned this before a little bit or alluded to it, consumer protection laws. So this has to do with rental agreements and just your interactions and owner-operators' interactions with the customers. So, you know, self-storage facilities are subject to consumer protection laws, which vary by jurisdiction. You know, these laws may govern the terms of rental agreements, require disclosure of fees and charges, and even prohibit certain unfair or deceptive practices. Self-storage operators must ensure that their rental agreements and business practices comply with these laws, and failure to do so can result in fines and penalties or legal action by your customers. Insurance, that's another legal consideration to think about. It can border a legal consideration. Also best practices and in a lot of instances and lender required practice. So now facilities should have adequate insurance coverage to protect against potential losses due to fire, theft, hazard, and other things. So landlord, that's their responsibility to ensure that insurance coverage is adequate and sufficient to cover the value of stored items and the property in general. Security, we talked about above, proper security measures should be in place. Maintenance, we also previously discussed, the facility should be maintained regularly to ensure it's in clean, good repair, free of hazards. This will reduce liability issues, things like that. So finally, legal considerations are compliance with laws and regulations. As we discussed earlier, zoning's a big deal. Make sure that you have proper zoning whenever you're investing in this type of property and such. Thanks for joining me today. I appreciate the time. Look forward to talking with you soon. As always, invest wisely.
Thanks for listening to the Real Estate Diversification Podcast. Did you enjoy the episode? Visit www.rediversification.com to tune in to more exciting episodes and free information and tools that will help you succeed. Leave us a review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and our other social media channels at the RED Podcast. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time. Missouri Bar Advertising Disclosure. Neither the Supreme Court of Missouri nor the Missouri Bar reviews nor approves certifying organizations or specialist designations. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.